Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Robin Bode. Bode is a graduate of Syracuse University, where she received degrees in art education and environmental arts. She worked as an art teacher at the Elizabeth Kloon Montessori School in Ithaca and as a special ed teacher in the Ithaca City School District. For 20 years, she was creator and owner of Silk Oak, a hand silk screen printing and design company. But in 2008, Robin Bode's life changed dramatically when her 18-year-old daughter was diagnosed with leukemia and died from the disease 3 years later. She turned to blogging, photography, and volunteer work at HospiCare, and we will talk to her about her journey and how she's learned to live with great loss. And welcome to the show, Robin.
Thank you, Tish.
Now, let's set up the scene. May 15th, 2008, your daughter was having symptoms, and she decided to call your sister, who was a physician, to talk about her symptoms. Tell us more about what happened then.
Marika had purple bruises. She had headaches and fatigue. And she had called my sister Lori, who's a family practitioner near Boston. And my sister told her to have me look for tiny burgundy snowflakes called petechiae near her eyes. Marika's face was full of these little pinpoint-sized red spots that are caused by bleeding into the skin.
So tell me, you hadn't noticed this until your doctor sister mentioned it, huh?
It was so tiny. Even the dermatologist she saw the day before hadn't noticed this.
Oh, my God. Okay, so you tell your sister you did see these spots, and you rushed to the emergency room, right?
We made a mad dash to our local emergency room, where from 300 miles away, my sister phoned in a request for tests. An hour later, she called back, and bam, cancer, leukemia, it whacked the life we knew inside out and upside down.
Yeah. God, what an amazing story. Tell us how you reacted, though. I mean, did you know what leukemia was? Did you have any idea? I mean, were her symptoms so bad that you thought it was something?
Actually, I didn't. I thought Marika just didn't want to do her homework.
Oh, really?
I had no idea leukemia was cancer.
Oh, really? So you knew absolutely nothing at that time.
That's right.
Wow, what an amazing thing. So immediately, this was right before she was ready to graduate from high school, right? Right when she had just turned 18. And so you immediately had to get her into chemotherapy, right? I mean, it was adamant because this was advanced already. Tell us about that. She goes into chemotherapy and gets quite ill from it.
She almost died two times in the first 3 weeks. And here she was expecting to graduate, expecting to go to her senior prom. She had all sorts of things lined up. She was going to work at the Stewart Park Day Camp.
Wow.
As a counselor for the summer. She was going to go to college in 3 weeks. She had girlfriends and boyfriends and a million things to do and prepare for. And she was so close to freedom and independence, and suddenly there's APML leukemia, and it's advanced and aggressive. So we were transferred after one day at Keoghan Medical to Strong Memorial Hospital in Rochester. And it was an intense chemotherapy attack. She had horrible reactions to everything, to the drugs.
So did they think she was allergic?
They just began to understand that this was Marika and this was how she was going to react to things. She had seizures, respiratory failure, complications of all kinds. She was put on life support. Her hair was falling out and she was missing her senior prom, and wherever she was wheeled off to, whenever she regained consciousness, there I was, her mother. I was not her favorite person.
Yeah.
She was stuck.
Well, so tell me about that. Why do you say that?
I think it was typical mother-teenage-daughter things. I think it would have straightened itself out in the years to come, but that's what we were given.
You guys weren't very close.
We were on top of each other. We were close in a kind of daily check-in, maybe we weren't close, talking close, but we were there, and we were on the same channel, and we wanted to make sure that we had dinner lined up, and we wanted to make sure that everything went smoothly, that we had our computers. We rated nurses nasty or nice.
So you did have a camaraderie then in some ways. It sounds like me and my mom, too. We didn't talk that much about certain things, but you could tell we were mother and daughter. We had this closeness that was between us and not necessarily so verbal. Yeah, interesting.
Right. And we were both, it was hard to face this cancer thing because we had just no idea where it was going to take us. And it was scary. She was unconscious a lot of the time, too.
Oh, that's amazing. But you know what makes me amazed, too? She made it to her graduation, her high school graduation, and then she went through 1 year of college, right?
It was pretty incredible.
It must have been an incredible will
and
Marika had.
She was one strong person. My mother called her a tough cookie, and she was.
Oh, God. But the sad story continues, though. In 2009, she has a relapse. 2010, she has another relapse. Tell us about that. That's when things really, really, you knew she was going downhill, right?
No.
Oh.
I did not know she was going downhill. And part of not talking about what's going on is that it is no longer a threat to your hope. It doesn't crush, everything, all the possibilities. I did not know she was going downhill until the final 2 weeks.
Oh, God, that's amazing. How was she dealing with this? She was young, and she was having these symptoms earlier than when it was diagnosed, but she must have felt pretty okay and full of energy, right?
Well,
was she fighting the fact that she was this ill?
When she was on the drugs, when she was in treatment, she felt miserable. She'd sleep all day and a good part of the night, and she'd come home and she'd just stay around and not do anything. But when she was feeling good, she partied. She stayed out late. She made music with her friends. She sang. And she lived like the lights could go out at any time, like she only had an hour left.
Mm. So she really tried to get everything in it all at once.
She did.
And she knew that, huh?
I would kind of yell at her. Oh, that's terrible. I was really upset because I would tell her, you're not facing reality. And I would think that she was in denial. She was not going to talk about anything. She was just going to live her life the way she intended to. And It drove me a little crazy.
Yeah, and she was an adult at that time, so she had, be able to do that.
When a kid turns 18, that little girl, even if she's holding her stuffed animal, that girl is in charge of her medical decisions. And the doctors on that first morning asked her permission to include her mother and her father and my sister, who diagnosed the whole thing, in her medical treatment.
And she said
medical
yes,
decision.
Right?
She did.
God, and she didn't have to. That's amazing. God, you guys must have been really on edge wondering what she was going to do.
She was a little scared at that point, I think.
Yeah. And how did the rest of the family deal with this? I know you were divorced at the time. Your husband was living separate life. Did you have other kids?
I have a son. He was in the Army at the time.
Ah.
He was in Iraq, fighting in the desert with improvised explosive devices.
Oh, my God, Robin.
it was an interesting thing. While she was fighting for her life, he was kind of flirting with death.
As well. So what stress must have been on the parents and and the family, my goodness.
Well, my thing was to get through each day, and with Marika, it was just, from start to finish, okay, what are we going to eat for breakfast? What are we going to eat for lunch? Where am I going to go to get a good dinner? And what are we doing in between?
Yeah.
And I didn't even focus. I think I didn't even think of my son for a long time.
Yeah. So this was really one of those terrible cases you don't want anybody to go through, but you were able to live for the moment, it sounds like. In fact, you had to.
I had to.
Yeah. Well, okay, so tell us, in 2011, she had to have a stem cell transplant. That was something that they thought probably was going to be the last hope for a cure, huh?
That was to be the cure. It was risky. And we did not talk about that. We just did what we had to do to get there. And there was actually a little tiff in the middle of that because she did not want us there during the transplant.
Mm.
And the nurses finally got her to agree to let us stay there while the transplant was happening. We yeah. brought in apple cider, bubbly, and cake and made a party of it. And yes, that was supposed to be the cure.
But they told you the risks, right? And they told her the risks, too, because essentially she was an adult. So you all had to have been told what the risks were, right?
Right. But it was so hard to really talk about them. Now, she did hand me a piece of paper for her health care proxy, which I didn't understand at the time what it was. She had tried to give it to her best friend, and her best friend knew what it was and said, I don't think so, Marika. And Marika gave me her health care proxy, and I kept it folded up in a tiny little piece of a ball in the bottom of whatever backpack or purse I had on me. And I was always hoping I would not have to use it. We found ourselves in the middle of a trip. We'd have to stop at a strange hospital because she would get 104 fever or something, and I'd be kind of mauling that little piece of paper, the crumpled piece of paper.
Yeah.
But here was this healthcare proxy that I had to make life and death decisions for Marika, and we had not talked about it.
Oh, well, I guess you have to be grateful that she gave it to you, though, because God knows what would have happened if she hadn't.
They insisted, her doctors yeah. insisted that she choose somebody, and she chose me, and I was just so grateful and proud. I felt really good about that.
Yeah, yeah, and so she was able to face that was a necessity.
Well, she was able
even
to face
she had
a lot.
Hope. Yeah, exactly.
A lot more than I could as her
yeah.
mother.
Yeah, it's a remarkable story. So the story continues. 2 weeks after the stem cell, she got incredibly sick with a respiratory infection, and it destroyed her lungs.
It did. They put her on life support. The doctors let her keep going on this breathing machine for maybe 2 weeks longer than they would have liked. And her father and I agreed that we wouldn't allow any painful procedures. But when one of her lungs collapsed, we let them put a stent in her rib to support the lung. And when the other lung went too, we had them put another one on the other side, and nothing worked.
Wow. God, this remarkable story, remarkable. She died on March 3rd, 2011, right? And you said it's the hardest day of your life.
Because I had that little piece of paper, the healthcare proxy, I was the one that had to sign to disconnect her life support.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Robin Boaty. We're talking about her very sad and dramatic journey through her daughter's illness and death and how it changed her life. Let's talk about what you found after she died. You didn't think she was talking about things. You thought she was in denial. But you found all these journals with songs and poems and talk, discussion about her death. Tell us about that. What an amazing find.
It was the day I got home, the day after she died. And I felt like concrete, like heavy frozen mud. And I remember I did not want to be alive. I couldn't go upstairs to her bedroom. I put it off all day long, even though I could kind of feel her pulling me up there. And finally, in the evening, I gave in. I went upstairs, and I was lying in her bed, and I felt her weight on me. And out of the corner of my eye, I saw this book standing out an inch from the other books on the shelf. It was a spiral brown journal, and I opened it up. It was a blank journal, but there was one poem written on the first page in her best handwriting. She'd written this very haunting poem, and there was nothing else beyond it. It was almost as if she was daring me to continue. So any feeling of wanting to die, end my life, was suddenly wiped out as I discovered this poem and that there were more journals. There were songs and poems and plays and prose, Over the next weeks and months, I read everything she'd written. She wrote about her life. She wrote about her death. She wrote about what it was like to have cancer and how it affected her relationships. She wrote about love. She wrote all the things I wished we'd talked about, all the conversations we should have had, and I knew 3 weeks after her death, sitting in the middle of her bedroom floor with a spiral-bound book in my lap, I first realized that she'd been thinking, processing, and writing everything all along. She'd been grieving for her life, and I had no idea. And that's when it hit me. It was me. I was the one not facing reality. I was the one pretending she could go on living forever.
Yeah, good. Oh, that's amazing. You said her last words to you were, "Get a life, Mom," right? And so the way you talk about it in the blogs you've written, it almost sounds like she left you a map.
Well, she didn't leave a map. I had a lot to think about, mm-hmm. and all I could think was, I want her life. I don't want my life. I want her life. She sang, so I tried to sing. She was fearless, so I tried to be brave. I wore her clothes. I wore her jewelry. I got her name tattooed on my arm because that was the life that I wanted. And I discovered that Marika liked Facebook. She liked writing, photography, and blogging. I hated cameras. I feared technology. I didn't even know how to type, and I thought blogging was a cult activity.
That is so amazing.
It was, but I tried all these things for her, to honor her, and maybe even to try to find her. I expanded what I could, what I was, and I think I became a bigger, better person because of all that. And the thing I did that helped me a lot, I wrote Marika a long letter. I was finally able to say the things in words on paper that I wanted to say to her. And the letter changed into a manuscript, which contains some of Marika's own writings. And it feels like we have this project together.
Yeah, that's amazing. Tell us what you learned from her writing, though. Was she afraid of death? Did she teach you about your own life and how you're going to have to face that, too?
She faced everything. There was fear, or she said there was fear, but to me it sounded all very courageous and very together and very thought out. Like, she knew that this could happen, and she knew it would happen.
Uh-huh. Was there any kind of evidence that she had confided in friends and talked to friends, whereas she wouldn't talk to you? But
no, she hadn't talked to friends
either.
So
she mainly talked to her journal.
And that was how she did it. I saw on the first page of the night that she was first diagnosed where she wrote, and she had always been writing before then, but all of a sudden it was not a thing of writing how terrible her life was. It wasn't before cancer. She was very unhappy. And after cancer, after her diagnosis, she did everything she could to make her life shine, to make it beautiful.
Wow. Lessons learned. No matter how much time you have, that's absolutely remarkable. Tell us when you started your own blog and how did you transfer, you know, from trying to live her life to living your own? To tell us. I mean, you started writing a blog, but that was for you. What was it not?
The blog was to tell about the little things I did each day, how I felt, where I was going, how I was seeing the world, how I was trying to hold on to whatever I could of my daughter.
Well, what made you decide to let it go public? That's a transformation that I find remarkable. You know, I mean, your daughter kept private journals. When people let blogs go live so that everybody, you thought perhaps you could help people, huh?
That's what I wanted to do in the end. That's not why I started blogging. I started blogging because I had this manuscript that I felt I just had to get out there because I felt that that might help people. And I was told, no, you can't submit a manuscript to an agent or a publisher without having some social media presence. That's the reason why I started blogging. I wanted to do what Marika was doing, but I wasn't necessarily interested in going public, whereas Marika loved to be in the spotlight. she blogged and posted on Facebook. And
You only found that afterwards, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. This was not anything I ever would have done for myself, but I could do it for her.
Yeah. And now that some years have gone by, are you doing it for yourself now?
I find that it's not so much for myself now. I want to help people. I want to. Okay, let me backtrack. Yes, I'm doing it for myself because it helps me. It helps me get out in the world and find what can I do, what can I tackle that I'm afraid of. But more than that, I'm reaching out to people. I love to hear from people. You know, I lost my son. My daughter died too. You know, and I love to hear their stories. To me, it just makes sense. And I like to hear about their children. I like to hear what they're doing. I like to be able to share maybe what I'm doing.
And how you survived this kind of sorrow. That's a remarkable thing to try to help somebody with, the ultimate. Yeah. Tell us about, you also do photoshopping and photography. That was another hobby that you said you were sort of afraid of. You were afraid of technology and cameras and stuff. What made you decide to do that?
I was afraid I would forget Marika. I had a limited number of photographs. A lot of photographs, but they're limited. And I just wanted to do everything I could to bring her back or bring her to a point where I would not forget her face. And Tompkins Cortland Community College was offering a digital photography class. Knowing nothing about cameras or technology, I enrolled. And as soon as Photoshop was introduced into the class, I started copying Marika's image onto every landscape and every photo that I took.
Yeah, I've seen some of that on your website and your blog.
It was very comforting and it was challenging. And I felt it was something where Marika was going to be able to be proud of me. Uh-huh. And that was important.
And you've kept it up, though. I mean, now you're taking pictures of other things, I've noticed. You take pictures of landscapes and pictures of our studio here. Yeah.
Well, the thing with Photoshop, if your life is in turmoil, if you've experienced loss, it has these really great tools. There's a patch tool, a path selection tool, a dodge tool, an add anchor tool, a magic eraser, a magic wand, a clone stamp that could be useful, and there's this healing brush. So the possibilities for change and control are endless, and maybe that's what I needed, because I can go, to this day, I can go into Photoshop and lose myself and find myself, and all of a sudden, it's time to do the next thing, and I will have felt, I'll feel like I've done something, like I've created something, and I used to be an artist before cancer, and I'd given it up, but now I'm rediscovering that that's an important part of myself.
Yeah. And you know, everybody talks about how art is healing to those who witness it and those who make it, you know. And regardless of whether you've had a drama in your life, art seems to be something that heals and comforts the soul in some ways.
It does.
Talk to us also about the fact that you volunteer for hospice care in the group that you're involved in. To tell us a little bit about that.
I make quarterly phone calls to the bereaved to check in. Sometimes it's a person who's been married to someone for 50 years and suddenly that person is gone. And the bereaved person is very lonely, maybe all of a sudden living alone for the first time in years and years. And maybe the family is tired of hearing that person talk about the one they loved and lost.
Yeah.
So I like hearing about this. And you know, I make those phone calls. And sometimes it's really hard to hear them cry, but I think it's healing for both of us.
Mm-hmm. And before you started making calls, you went there for yourself, I assume, to heal yourself and to learn what can be learned from this experience?
They do have workshops for people who are grieving. They have specific workshops for people who have lost a child, people who have lost a spouse. So I did go to a few of those, although I don't remember the timing, if what happened first, if I started volunteering or if I started going. I was a pretty latecomer to these groups. I didn't discover that I could be with other people who had a similar loss and find comfort in that.
Yeah. It sounds like you were kind of isolated in some ways, right?
In some ways I was.
Yeah, yeah. So this has opened up all this new stuff for you, which is so great that you found it. And the group is called Compassionate Friends of Ithaca, right? The
group this is another group. It's not really affiliated with HospiCare, except that we meet up there. We meet on the first Thursday of every month in the HospiCare building. And this is a great group for people who have lost a son or a daughter, a grandchild, or a sibling. It's for adults, though. A child at any age, from any cause, if you've lost a child. We are a self-help group. We don't have professionals there, or if we are professionals, we're not acting as professionals. We're acting as people who have been through the same thing. We understand a lot of the pain, and we volunteer there in honor of our children, our siblings, or our grandchildren who have died.
Yeah, that sounds like a great group. But people need help when these traumas happen in their lives.
That's right.
Main thing you can do is not stay isolated.
Right. This is a new chapter in Ithaca now for the Compassionate Friends.
Great, great. Well, Robin, we are almost out of time. I know you've written two books about your daughter. They're self-published, Never Gone, and one's called Duets with My Dead Daughter, a memoir. And I want you to give some contact information, your website and so on, so people can get in touch, get a copy of your book, talk to you, whatever people want to do. But can you give us some contact information?
Okay. I'm on Facebook as Robin Bodie or Robin Bodie / writer. My name is spelt R-O-B-I-N-B as in beautiful, O-T as in terrible, I-E. I'm also on twitter.com/Robin Bodie.
Great. Well, I hope people will get in touch with you. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us. This has been a remarkable story, and you're remarkable to be able to sit and talk to us about it and share your wisdom. Thank you.
Thank you for this opportunity.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.